Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at America and immigration. Illegal immigration has made the southern border a lightning rod for fiery political debate. How is that shaping the upcoming election, and how might the outcome impact America's neighbors to the south? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. Like many countries, domestic violence in Iraq is a major problem. There's a toxic legacy of war, poverty, and an increasingly extreme religious culture. Cases of violence in the home have more than doubled within the past 5 years, according to the United Nations.
We hear and see every day kinds of violence that Iraqi society never seen before.
But unlike many other countries, Iraqi law does not specifically criminalize domestic violence.
At the moment, there is no crime if a beating took place to discipline a wife. That is still the legal right of a husband.
And people who try to help survivors escape are often themselves prosecuted and even threatened.
I was told if I don't stop this work, I will be killed right away. All women activists are in danger.
But still, a group of brave women have built a network of secret shelters for victims of domestic violence. I'm Rebecca Kesby, and some of those involved in this dangerous and illegal work have shared their stories with me.
What do you think would have happened to you had you not been helped by a woman's shelter?
Oh, I don't know. I'd probably be dead. Most likely dead.
This is Iraq's secret women's shelters.
No,
from the outside, no one would be able to tell this is a shelter. It looks like any other normal house. When we set up a new shelter, we try to find an area where we won't get asked too many questions, like why there is no man living in this house.
This is Janat. It's her code name. She's giving us a virtual tour of one of the secret women's shelters she helps to organize in a major city in Iraq.
Okay, so I'm just going into the kitchen because the girls are cooking dinner. I'm just going to record this sound for you. What are you making? She says they're making burgers.
It's one of dozens across the country, a network of safe houses hiding in plain sight, run by women, for women escaping violence at home.
We do have a cook here, but if the women feel like they want to make something themselves, that's fine. They're free. It's not a prison. And some women have children. So lots of our shelters have kids running about. And here are the kids playing about in the garden. What are you up to?
To protect their safety, all the recording from inside the shelters in this programme has been done by the women who live in them themselves. We're not mentioning locations, and we've changed some names. We haven't even physically met. But then, that is the beauty of the internet.
Actually, as I'm talking to you now, some of the girls are looking after my son.
And so, do any men ever come into the house?
No, none. Only my little son today and a couple of the other kids. They're the only men allowed in this shelter.
Jannat is 36 and a survivor of abuse herself. Many of the women involved in the secret shelters are. She was helped by a safe house like this about 15 years ago after surviving sexual assault. A lot of the funding for the shelters comes from foreign charities. In other countries, places like this are in secret locations to avoid a violent partner finding them. But these are also hiding from the state, because it's illegal to run a women's shelter in Iraq. Why is that so important to you, that these are women-only spaces?
Well, most of the women are victims of male violence, and when they arrive, they are just terrified. They've been attacked and violated. So we try to remove any unnecessary stress, anything that makes them feel vulnerable. So no men at all. How do women find us? Sometimes it's word of mouth from a friend. Mostly it's by our sites on social media. They get in touch and we try to help. When a new woman wants to come to a shelter, we talk her through the rules first. She has to promise never to reveal the location to anyone. It's really important for security, because if the location becomes known, that puts us all at risk. Also, before she's allowed in, she's got to give up her mobile phone, because they can be traced.
And mobile phones have been traced to the shelters. Some survivors have family members in the security services. We've been told that just a few months ago, a senior officer ordered a raid at one safe house where his daughter had taken refuge. She'd hidden her phone from the shelter staff, which he'd tracked. She was dragged out of the building by her father's men. Other women were beaten and some even arrested.
When people end up here, they are so traumatized. Sometimes all they've ever known is fighting to survive. We don't just provide a safe space for women. It's a cozy home. We support training and education so she can get a job. You could say we're as much a school as we are a shelter.
And actually, this is your own experience too, isn't it? What do you think would have happened to you had you not been helped by a women's shelter?
Oh, I don't know. I'd probably be dead. Most likely dead.
The first known women's safe house in Iraq was set up in Baghdad by well-known Iraqi feminist Yanar Mohammed in 2003. Since then, a network of secret shelters has grown across the country. It's been difficult from day one, she says, but never as hard as it is today.
The situation is much worse than it was 20 years ago. Our shelters are still working, but in a very secret way. I try to keep our staff as safe as we can, but then again, the government has become very fierce in fighting women, and my safety is not guaranteed at this time.
Yanar is considered a criminal by many in the Iraqi government, which is dominated by religious hardliners. She's also been targeted by militants.
Do I speak about it publicly in Iraq? I cannot. I cannot speak about anything publicly in Iraq now, because those who are prevailing in the Iraqi parliament, in the so-called democratic Iraqi parliament, don't allow you to do that.
And you've had, well, so many threats, death threats. I mean, you live under constant risk wherever you are, which is why we're not saying where we're speaking to you now. But how did those first threats come about?
They were sent by email, and I was told if I don't stop this work, I will be killed right away. But I cannot do public appearances anymore. I rarely speak on social media. I cannot disclose where I am. And even at this time, all women activists are in danger, not just me.
Even though some police officers actually bring you victims of violence to look after, don't they? But you still have no protection in the law. And in fact, you've faced a prison sentence just for helping these women.
I was taken to court 3 times. In the first time, it was due to running, as they called them, illegal women's shelters. And the case was dismissed by an honest judge. The second case, they decided to accuse my organization of trafficking women. The way they look at a woman's shelter is that when she's outside her home, she must have been kidnapped.
Yana has also been accused of running brothels. The third lawsuit she faced was filed by an Islamist group. It's only recently been dismissed after international pressure.
We have been suffering in courts for 3 years. Just because we want to save women's dignity and to keep their safety in a country where the government doesn't want women to step outside their homes, even if these homes are abusive and kill the women.
The Iraqi constitution bans all forms of violence, but Article 41 of the Penal Code still allows the use of beatings as domestic discipline. If a wife disobeys her husband, for example. There's been a campaign for the past decade to change this law, and a draft bill has been put to Parliament 4 times, but each time it's been blocked by hardliners who want to retain Article 41 and the rights it gives to men. It's controversial and dangerous to speak publicly on this, but one woman who has been fighting to change the law is former MP Shirouk al-Abayachi, and she thinks what's happening in Iraqi homes can be directly linked to the violence the country suffered for years.
Since the 80s till now, Iraqis haven't seen things other than violence, wars, sanctions. Poverty in Iraq is getting also higher and higher. And of course, the reaction of all kind of violence in the society reflects at home and domestic violence. We hear and see every day kinds of violence that Iraqi society never seen before. It's actually very, very bad. There is no awareness of how important to have laws and rules that actually punish domestic violence. There is a kind of mentality that tried to keep the Iraqi society as a backwards society, not having the rights in a normal way as we used to enjoy the rights before. Now, as a woman, I'm not enjoying the same rights as I used to or my mother used to enjoy before. There are some figures in the parliament against the legislations, the domestic violence law. They use the Sharia or religious arguments to support their attitude. But we know that even the religious institutions, they don't mind this law.
Oh, that's really interesting. So you've spoken to religious leaders who have told you that they would support a change in the law.
They didn't say that they would support, but they say we don't have anything against this law. There is nothing in the draft that is against the Sharia or against the Islamic rules.
So you think that the conservative politicians are using religion for political reasons?
Of course, all the time.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. This is Iraq's Secret Women's Shelters.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at America and immigration. Illegal immigration has made the southern border a lightning rod for fiery political debate. How is that shaping the upcoming election, and how might the outcome impact America's neighbors to the south? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
We've approached several MPs in the Shia Muslim parties who've consistently voted against changing the law. None wanted to speak to us.
But in the Iraqi media, MPs have argued that the proposed law would undermine traditional family values. In a TV interview, Kays el-Ghazali, leader of the League of the Righteous, which is a political party with an armed militia, said that the proposed domestic violence law would disband the Iraqi family, saying that victims should not seek shelter from civil institutions, sponsored, he said, by American interests. So where does all this leave the police? Dealing with the impact of domestic violence, but with confusion over the law. I've been speaking to one woman who faces this issue on a daily basis.
Frankly speaking, it is necessary to change the law. Because at the moment, Article 41 of the Penal Code stipulates that there is no crime if a beating took place to discipline a wife or child. At the moment, that is still the legal right of a husband.
This is Major Lara Fadil Abdullah, an officer with the Community Police, a special unit within the Iraqi police force that's largely staffed by women.
To be honest, we don't know the true number of cases. I can only talk about the ones that are actually reported to us. But for example, yesterday, I was called out to a woman in her early 30s who had been hospitalized. She was covered in cuts and bruises, really badly beaten. It turned out that she had run away from the family home because her brother was violent. We found who'd also attacked her sister and her mother. He was basically terrorizing them all.
That must be pretty tough to be confronted with all that.
Yeah, it really does cast a shadow over you. It is depressing.
But if the law's not clear on domestic violence, what can you, the police, do about it? I mean, if a man is protected by the law and is effectively allowed to beat his wife and children, you can't arrest him, can you?
Well, our job is to try to resolve cases before having to refer them to the courts. The police can get a written pledge from a husband promising that he won't do it again. As the community police, our role is to stop the immediate violence, secure the written pledge, then follow with monthly visits to the family to check up, especially on kids. But if a man has caused permanent damage or disability to his wife, in most cases, we would take that to court.
So it's really only in extreme cases of violence, like murder or life-changing injuries, that it would normally go to court.
Well, we certainly don't consider it an achievement if we help to separate a husband and wife. Divorce leads to a breakdown in the community.
So part of your job is, what, like a family counsellor then?
Well, we have helped lots of couples to stay together. Look, sometimes you will get a wife who might be too sensitive or over-emotional. And when you get to the house, you find the husband got aggressive because he's under stress. So they just need a third person to hear all the different views and help bring them back together.
So with divorce being such a social taboo and no real protection under the law, many women are trapped in violent marriages. A few, like this woman who we're calling Mariam, do manage to escape to one of the secret shelters we've been hearing about.
I couldn't stay at home. It was unsafe. The day I came to this shelter was the first chance I had to get away. I was kind of in a state of shock and panic. I was terrified that my husband would find me and kill me.
Mariam is only 22. She has a little boy of 4 and a 3-year-old daughter. She says she wants a divorce, exactly what the Conservatives want to stop. But listen to her distressing story of a marriage she never actually wanted to be in.
My family made me quit school to marry a man in his 50s. I didn't like him,
but they forced me into the marriage. I was 15. I was basically a child. The problems started straight away. Whenever I challenged my husband, he would beat me. I always had bruises on my arms or legs, everywhere. My father was violent towards me too. The worst violence I have suffered has been at the hands of my own father. He has caused me so much pain. He would hit me with a glass, an ashtray, a house brick, anything, whatever was close to his hand. I would be bleeding everywhere, and he didn't care at all. Mostly, my husband would hit me with his own bare hands. He often dragged me by my hair. He would rip the hair out of my head. He beat me in the face many times. He hit me so hard, knocking me out many, many times.
And what about sexual violence? Did you have to deal with that as well?
Yes, he did force me to have sex with him. Yes, he forced me a lot. Throughout our marriage, I would just feel like I had to do it. I had to obey, you know, to make the abuse stop. And then I found out about this shelter from some girlfriends of mine. They had heard about the organization, and I got in touch.
And that's when Mariam's story began to improve. She found safety, support, and even a new hobby.
الابتزاز الإلكتروني وانتشاره في المجتمع. بإدارة الناشطة فاطمة كيف الدين.
Some of the women in Mariam's shelter are making radio programs that they post online, talking about their experiences and offering advice and information to women who may not be able to make it to a shelter. It's called Radio Equality.
غالباً الاجتماعي بما في ذلك الفيسبوك أو الإنستغرام وكذلك الهواتف الذكية.
أكثر شيء إنه حبيته بالمجر إنه
The best thing about the shelter is the people in charge of it. They are lovely. They don't treat us like cases or patients. They treat us like daughters. Well, even better than that, probably.
And you're taking classes now.
Yes, I have started music lessons. I go to classes twice a week and I'm learning to play the lute. But I'm still only a beginner.
Have you been in touch with your family?
No, I cannot contact my family. It's over. I have filed for divorce. I am never living with my husband again.
So looking back, was it the right decision to leave your husband?
Yes, definitely. I never want my kids to go through what I did. I'm going to build a better future for them. They love it here, thank God. They are living a healthy family life, full of joy, with no violence.
Janat has come to visit Mariam's shelter. Their children are playing together in the garden as the two women discuss an important topic, hair.
Janat, do you know just 2 weeks after dyeing my hair, the grey is back?
For me, it's just after 4 days. Look at my hair. She didn't do a very good job.
Oh no, that's not good. Shall I dye it for you?
Every woman involved in the shelters knows she risks her reputation and her own safety. Several shelters have been raided by the police. Others have been attacked by extremist militia when their location has become known. And those on the front line are the most vulnerable. Jeanette, the work you do organising these shelters, it's really dangerous for you personally.
Yeah,
this job is really dangerous. Some of the women here, their fathers are senior officials of the state or maybe a powerful clergyman. So yeah, there are many risks daily for us. We feel a bit like soldiers. I'm always moving from one place to the next with my family for safety. They keep trying to disband us. But just as I got a chance to rebuild my life, I want every survivor of domestic violence to have a chance.
And you're happily married now with kids.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm 36 now. Not so young anymore, as you can see from my grey hair.
And your husband, is he a good guy?
He's such a good man and very long-suffering. Because every time we take in a new case, I go home and rant. You know, I say, you men are awful. You should see what this one did to his wife. And I sort of take it out on him. But he tolerates it because he loves me and he believes in my work. But it's not only me. Lots of the women and girls who have come through our shelters are now happily married with children and stable lives. I wish you could meet them all. I'm so proud of them.
Jeanette is also determined to change the law in Iraq and to change mindsets everywhere.
Right now, we're going backwards in Iraq. They want to erase all the gains women have made. There is a regression in human rights. And not just in Iraq, it's all over the world. If we stop fighting this war on women, our daughters will have an even tougher time than we've had. So we've got to fight on.
You've been listening to Iraq's Secret Women's Shelters for the documentary. It was written and presented by me, Rebecca Kesby. It's a CTVC production for the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at America and immigration. Illegal immigration has made the southern border a lightning rod for fiery political debate. How is that shaping the upcoming election, and how might the outcome impact America's neighbors to the south? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.